I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greetings, Grapple fans, and welcome to this edition of the Pro Wrestling Index here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. I was just trying to remember which episode we are up to, and for the life of me, I can't quite remember. I've lost count in there somewhere. Maybe it's because of all the pay-per-views, because we are previewing one or we're reviewing one. Seems to be the way now with WWE. Every other week, there's a pay-per-view. It's just too many. But anyway, so Andy Wells is here in the chair with you. I am the host for this evening, and I am joined not by Mo Chatra. He's not with us for a couple of weeks. Instead, I am joined by my good friend Guy Drinkle. Evening, Guy.
Evening, Andy. I mean, Mo hasn't fell asleep this time, which is also news. I'm stepping in.
Yeah, stepping into the breach. A decent amount to talk about. I mean, we are going to get into it. The Hell in the Cell pay-per-view that was this past weekend. We will get into that because it was pretty decent, and there's a bit to talk about, which is always good. But before we move on to that, a couple of big talking points. One was on Raw, and the other was not on Raw. That being a talking point in itself. But we'll start with what was on there, and we went over it last week. We mentioned it, you know, the rumours of the Shield reuniting, and you know, these were not rumours anymore. It was happening. And lo and behold, there in front of our eyes, they did it. And I've got to say, Guy, I'm so impressed. It took them less than an hour to get a brand new T-shirt printing. You know, they'd only just got back together and they already had a T-shirt.
I know, it's almost like it's pre-planned. but yeah, I mean, the long-awaited Shield reunion, which has kind of came about a bit randomly. I think most people probably expecting a triple threat match at some point between them before the reunion. But no, here we are. I mean, it's kind of a bit random, but as you said before we started recording, this is just a very, 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 very good way of pasting over the lack of a champion crack, because Lesnar's probably not going to be about for Rumble, maybe a little bit before.
Rumours here will be seen before then. I think, yeah, the feeling is that this is a way of tidying things over storyline-wise.
Yeah.
Certainly for Roman Reigns, until we get to round about Rumble time, and then they can start building towards WrestleMania. When we're likely to see Reigns against Lesnar. And obviously this is an opportunity for Roman Reigns to perhaps curry favour a little bit more with the fans, try and get the fans on board with him. But my concern with this... well, he did get a bit of a cheer, you know, when they got together. It was a good moment, and there was some nice spots in there. And great that they're working with, you know, a team so well-oiled, a machine so well-oiled as Cesaro and Sheamus right now. But my concern in this is, you know, the Shield getting back together after a few years is a big thing, you know, in recent WWE history. It's a big thing for the fans, always going to get a great pop. It just kind of feels as though it's been thrown out there, and it's, I think it's one of those things that you can only do it, once for the first time, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
You know, that first ever reunion, that's a one-time thing. And to throw it away, you know, for what's going to be a B-show, really, TLC, it's, I don't know, I'm not sure whether they've really maximized it enough. For me, this could have been, you know, a SummerSlam event or something like that, something major, perhaps not WrestleMania, but it really could have been something a lot more significant.
Yeah, I mean, it is proper random. Like, there's no natural feud for them. I know, like, it's great having Sheamus and Cesaro in, which will be the main event, because they're fully deserving. And you got the Miz, and then you've got Braun Strowman for some silly reason. But it is a bit random. It is a bit random. I mean, when the Shield was at its peak, it was feuding with other three-man teams like the Wyatt family, Evolution, Ryback and Team Hell No. That was a bit random, but I mean, they got a good match out of them. So they'll definitely put on a show. But there was natural feuds to be had when the Shield was first about. This time, there's not many stables in. Especially on Raw. I mean, the New Day could have worked, but they're on SmackDown, obviously. It's a bit put together, as we've both said. It's to paper over crack, isn't it? Really. It's going to be fun. It's going to be good. I don't want to put a downer on it, but it's just a bit weird, as you say. This could have been probably even a WrestleMania moment. Never mind a SummerSlam moment.
Yeah. That's it. You don't want to put a downer on it because it is good to see and it will be enjoyable, but you just can't help feel that it really could have been a bit more significant and it could have been a bit more of an intense build-up. And that's the thing, you know, when you think of what these guys have been through and, you know, the reasons why they couldn't get along and yada, 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 you know, all it took was Braun Strowman to fight a couple of them and then the Miz and the Miz to turn and that's it. That's all it ever took, you know, compared to the things that, you know, that drew them apart not so long back. It just does feel as though it's just been thrown together so hastily. And it is, it's a little bit of a shame because I just think as much as anything, it's like perhaps a missed opportunity that they really could have got a lot more from this. You know, that they could have stretched this out over a few more weeks and it really would have been a major moment. And perhaps it could have been something for Survivor Series then. You know, that we've got, we're looking at a 3v4. You know, that's, I don't know. Like you say, you don't want to put a downer on it, but it does kind of feel, you do get the impression it has been chucked together and it's just a storyline filler. And you've, I don't know, it's just like, the Shield reuniting perhaps should be a bit more than a storyline filler for a couple of months.
Yeah, that's the main point. I mean, do you think someone else will? I mean, Matt Hardy's probably the most logical one because obviously Jeff's out. He's not really got a storyline, obviously, faced Strowman. Do you think he might get added to it to make it a 4-on-4?
Oh, heaven knows. That they might even throw Kalisto in there or something like that. The WWE do these random things from nowhere at times.
That's a good segue.
Well, yeah. Now, be honest. Now, I want you to be absolutely honest. When Kurt Angle comes out, because this is where we, you know, thought, actually, this could turn out to be a smart thing. You know, this no contact clause. Nobody on the current cruiserweight roster can touch him and all this. And you think, actually, maybe this could be, you know, an ingenious way to introduce somebody new into the cruiserweight division, and it almost was. And then he goes, and I have just signed to the cruiserweight division. Did you get excited? Did you think, oh, I wonder if this could potentially, could possibly be Johnny Gargano? How amazing would that be that Gargano turns up, wins a title, and then down the line we get Ciampa turn up, and then they feud over the cruiserweight championship? How amazing would that be? Were you disappointed when it was Kalisto?
Oh, it was terrible. It was awful. I mean, that's just because Kalisto is talented, apart from his famed promo from the draft where he was doing his lucha things or whatever he said. But yeah, I mean, to build up such a moment to a person like Kalisto, who had an alright run with the US champ, I know he was feuding with Ryback and that, and stuff like that, but Kalisto's very capable of putting on a good match, and he's not the most charismatic. But yeah, I'm glad Kalisto is there, but the silly build to have him come out as this new saving light of the cruiserweight division was a bit stupid, and I don't think there isn't that much to bounce back off on Enzo, and obviously it led to the title change, and I'm not that arsed about Kalisto being champion, but let's see where it goes. But there's more worrying news coming out the cruiserweight.
Yeah, I mean, just on Kalisto, yes, he is a good worker. You know, he can put on some really good matches, you know, and they can be exciting and everything like that. But the fact is, yeah, he doesn't have great charisma, but most importantly is his character has been buried over the past couple of years. He's been mediocrity. He's been a glorified jobber at times. Mm. And this is the thing. And that is when you get that kind of an impression and then they throw someone out there, you know, someone who you've been made not to care about, to think is pretty insignificant for a couple of years. You're conditioned into thinking they're no good. And then they throw them out there and you're supposed to suddenly take them as a serious contender. And this has been happening in various parts.
On bigger stages than the cruiserweight division.
Yes. So it's slightly bizarre. But yeah, I mean, you alluded to it there. Rumours are that Neville had walked out of Raw on Monday night and has apparently requested his release from WWE, and yeah, a talk of him being frustrated at storylines and everything else. This is not good, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, we talked in the WhatsApp group about differing levels of how we rate Neville, and I mean, I think if he was on SmackDown more so than Raw, he's definitely a champion, a main event talent. I mean, especially with this heel character that he brought, which kind of give the cruiserweight division a bit of relevancy till the WWE decided to make it the pre-show title. But yeah, it's definitely going, and we've seen this before with Austin Aries, and we'll probably see many more if the cruiserweight division continues to be this sideshow, which has only been given relevancy because someone sells a bit of merchandise but has not one shred of ability compared to others. It's really, really frustrating, and if Neville has asked for his release, I fully understand and fully support it. I mean, he is probably one of the most talented guys on the roster, and he's shown that he has charisma, especially in his heel character. As I said, he's
king of the cruiserweights.
I know exactly
that's what he is.
He is,
and he lived up to it. He was brilliant. He's fantastic to the point where fans were cheering at pure respect for how damn good he was. And not only that, it's little things. It's the little things. And Kevin Owens is brilliant at the little things that a heel should do. And he was doing the little things where he'd go up there, you know, for the finishing move, and it's spectacular, the red arrow. And because people were starting to cheer that he might be going for the red arrow, he'd turn, you know, throw a hand at them, climb down off the turnbuckles, and put a submission on instead. And it's like, that's what a heel does. You know, they're little things that a heel does. And it's, he were like, where's this guy been? You know, he was the vanilla babyface. Mm. And now he's suddenly this red hot heel. And I understand, yeah, you're saying he could be on SmackDown. Yes, he could be in the main event picture. But when I look to SmackDown and I see hot talent going in there, I see them being in a 50-50 booking with Dolph Ziggler, lose all of their heat, all of their momentum, and then be fed as fodder to
Jinder Mahal
to a jobber with the title yet. So it's, yeah, I can understand, yeah, perhaps he could be used better on SmackDown than Raw, but then I look on SmackDown and I think, they don't fill me with confidence. But on Neville himself, I mean, for him to want to leave, for it to go that far, that's got to be worrying. And like you mentioned there, Austin Aries, I mean, that's a good one to bring up, because there again, there was a guy frustrated with storylines, with the you know, character development and where they were taking him. And I think it's a worrying trend in that people who are in that cruiserweight division are obviously concerned about how the cruiserweights are positioned on WWE television.
Thing is, if you look at the two guys who, well, one guy who's left and one who's looking to leave, Neville's obviously got his history in WWE where he's had some very good matches. Not the most memorable of careers so far, but he's definitely had good matches. I mean, his NXT career was very good, but he's had his matches with, I think he did the US title open challenge with Cena, which was very good, and pretty much any Neville match is going to be good in some regard. And he failed to bridge the gap with the cruiserweight division. Austin Aries was a main event star. I know TNA was a much smaller audience base compared to the WWE, but Austin Aries was one of the most over talents in another wrestling group. And you look at these other people who seemingly don't have natural charisma like Austin Aries or heel charisma like Neville, and probably don't have the ability of Neville. And how are they going to bridge the gap? Because they don't get a chance. I've stopped watching 205 Live, so I don't know about that. But if they're not getting the opportunity on Raw, they're never going to bridge that gap. If these two proven world-class performers can't do it, how are these young guns going to do? How is Cedric Alexander going to do anything different that Austin Aries couldn't? It's crazy. It's really frustrating. And we saw with the original tournament that Cedric Alexander got over massively.
Yeah.
The
big thing about that tournament, though, is for me, was the setting. You know, putting the cruiserweights in a half-empty arena where people are leaving gives
SmackDown's half-empty to start with.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, but people are leaving. They're done.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they've been there for hours. They're going. They're not going to hang around for a show that doesn't really sort of mean too much. So, and that is a real shame, because there's some talent there. But the way it's been presented, the way it's been positioned, and that atmosphere that you get from the place being, you know, half empty at best at times, it's all wrong. It doesn't have that vibe to it. I think if you put the cruiserweights in the NXT setting, it's a closer knit. It's got some intensity to it, and then you could, you know, if you use that as your weekly show, and then still have them on segments, then people on Raw are actually looking forward to seeing these guys that they see on a network show that's pretty hot like NXT.
Mm.
I just think the setting and the atmosphere that you get across on screen to people gives you a vibe about the product. And if, you know, if half the audience can't be bothered to be there, then what does that tell you about the quality of the product? You know, whether it's true or not, whether the action is good or not, if people can't be bothered to hang around, you know, do you think, well, is it worth bothering me watching? And it's a real shame, because there's so much talent there, and it's so been so badly misused ever since they moved it onto the main roster.
Yeah, I think you made a good point with NXT. Now, I think it was Jason Roberts who made it in our WhatsApp group that if the Cruiserweight title was defended on NXT, they'd be probably one of the most over groups in the company, because Triple H had let them do what they're good at, whereas on Raw they have to sell the division, they have to sell the matches, they have to sell themselves as characters, when not many of them actually have characters that are established on Raw. Because you look at Drew Gulak, he's established his I think he's some presidential thing. He's trying to establish that on 205 Live. They've tried to establish feuds on 205 Live and then put them on Raw randomly. It just doesn't work. I mean, if in NXT you get a much more into it crowd because it's at Full Sail or wherever, it's smaller, it's more smart crowd, it's probably fair to say.
Yeah.
And they'll just be into it more. I mean, you can still have the people performing on the main rosters, but if you segregate them off into their own division on main TV, they're going to be treated as a sideshow. Half of them could do a job in the mid card. Mm-hmm. Well, most of them could, and most of them could get over in the mid card. It's just it really needs a revamp, and having Kalisto versus Enzo isn't gonna do anything for it, really.
No, a revamp and a rethink, that definitely. But fingers crossed that I'm kind of torn, actually. I'd say fingers crossed that Neville doesn't leave, because I don't want to see him leave. And I do want to see the King of the Cruiserweights back doing what he does. But in another way, if he's unhappy, I almost, you know, welcome him moving on, because, you know, as people have shown, that there is plenty of life out there beyond WWE now, whether it's Japan or ROH. There's so much going on. There's money to be made outside. So, I guess we'll just have to see what happens.
But I hope he stays in WWE, but most importantly, I hope he's happy in WWE.
Yeah. Let's hope he's utilised better than he has been the past few weeks.
Exactly.
But anyway, let's move along to the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. We won't really bother with the pre-show. I mean, there's just a one match on this. Yeah. But kicking the show off, and obviously the lights are split up when they're using the cell at the start and at the finish. So starting things off inside Hell in the Cell, we had New Day versus Usos for the Tag Team Championships. And these guys put on another excellent match. And they found ways to be innovative in presenting a different match to what they'd given before, but also presenting something slightly different to what we'd seen in a cell match before.
Yeah, I think everyone wanted it in the Hell in a Cell, because it'd won show the appreciation of this feud and what it's done to a quite tired division. But most importantly, they've performed every time they've been in the ring together. And, it doesn't look like it's continuing. But what a match to put on. Xavier Woods, when the New Day started, he was an absolute nobody. I think he was teaming with R-Truth at the time, before New Day. But look at him now. He's one of the best mouthpieces in the business, in the company. And he's performed every time he's been in the ring, whether it's been in singles or tag team, and he's fantastic. Big E's fantastic. The Usos, I thought the heel turn wouldn't work, but it's been brilliant, in my opinion.
Did you not think it would work? Because I've got to say, I thought they were crying out for an edge to them.
I was just really tired of them. I think they needed to be off screen more than have a change of character, but no, it worked perfectly. Especially
on that,
since New Day came to SmackDown.
Yeah, well, just on the Usos there as heels. You know what? I see the characters that the Usos have as heels, and you know what I see? I see a tag team Roman Reigns. Yeah. And I do think that this heel run for the Usos, they could organically turn back babyface now, because they've developed the characters so well. They're so much more rounded. I think it's made them better performers, and the crowd are respecting them for their work. I think their work has improved with it as well. They've learned a lot and they've developed a lot. And I feel that I think they could see a similar thing if WWE actually just let Roman Reigns do it. I don't think we're going to see it, certainly not in the near future now.
No.
But I think you could have a similar type of effect, because I think he naturally has that similar kind of character, where they're quite sort of cool, but they're also the, you know, with that nasty, that aggressive, but also that arrogant edge to them. And I see just similarities in the type of heel character that they can portray, and the benefits to that can be gained from a run in that character. So it's I think they've been in a shining light for how sometimes, you know, what you think is a character, how it can develop and change and really, really improve all round mic skills, in ring work, everything. I think they've been fantastic, and it's they deserve to have them belts.
Definitely. I think the best way of saying it is they're just more natural in this character. I mean, when before the heel change, they were obviously still doing the weird Rikishi playing in paint thing with the bright shorts, and it was a very tired and a bit meh. But since now it's a bit more realistic, it's a bit more modern, a bit more urban, and on the mic especially, they're very natural talkers. They're good talkers. And they have really good chemistry with New Day, who I think all three of them are pretty good on the mic, Xavier especially, as I said. And I mean, you look at the thing on SmackDown where they were giving each other kudos and respect. I mean, the thing where the Sabre's angle is cool, that made me chuckle, and it was just natural. And I think it just really works, and it's just the one test for them is if they can do it away from the New Day, because the Usos have probably had two good feuds in the time at WWE, like really good feuds. They had the Wyatt family, Harper and Rowan, they had really good matches a good few years ago, and then New Day, they're the two feuds they've had, and it may be possible that it's going to be the what they're called now, the Bludgeon Brothers or whatever they're bloody called.
Oh, yes.
With the fake ass hammers. So it might be, we might be seeing that feud again, but if that's going to have the Usos turning face, yeah, let's see how it goes. Let's see if it's more natural for them to be speaking now. But yeah, this feud's worked on so many levels.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Yeah, it will be intriguing to see how they get on not working with the New Day, and good to give them two teams a rest from each other and see how things progress. Not so intriguing was the next match up, Randy Orton and Rusev.
I forgot that happened.
Yeah, exactly. It was forgettable. A forgettable feud, even a forgettable match. And neither guy have gained anything from this. Rusev gets nothing because he's been beaten. And this is the guy who really should be on the rise. Randy Orton gets nothing from beating Rusev, really. His character remains as stale as it was going into it. It's just a pointless feud. And I think it was one of them moments where Rusev getting the upper hand on this could have done something for Rusev, and WWE could gain something from it. And Randy Orton would be no better or worse for winning or losing this feud. Such is his position. And it's another one of those.
Nobody cares about Randy Orton as a face anymore. Like,
no.
There was it Christian versus him when Randy Orton was first a face? I think that's the way around it. Well, there was so many years ago. I think that was the last time Randy Orton as a face worked, and that was probably 7 odd years ago. So that speaks volumes of it. Randy Orton is a really tired character. I mean, most people will agree that he's a fantastic worker when put in the right setting and when he's motivated. But this did nothing for Rusev. I mean, there was obviously rumours that Rusev, there was heat, or Rusev was wanting to leave a couple months ago. I don't know how genuine they were, but Rusev's booking so weird. I mean, when I think it was after Mania, I think he had a fatal four-way, and he looked like a main event talent. I can't remember when it was. I think it was after, it was the draft or after Mania, and it was a number one contendership for the WWE title, and Rusev just came back, and he was in peak condition, and he looked like he belonged in the main event. And ever since then, he's been buried by every big star he's gone up against, and it's just been stupid. He's had the love triangle with Enzo and Cass. He got destroyed by Cena in a stupid flag match, and now this thing with Randy Orton. Rusev should be a main event heel by now. They've just wasted him.
Yeah. And like you say, you know, there's no benefit for either character or the show to be gained from the way that they've played it out. Exactly. And that's a real shame when neither character benefits from a feud and the outcomes of a feud. That's a real shame. That's a failure. And it's a real waste of Rusev, and it's kind of concerning with Randy Orton. I think Randy Orton needs something different. And I mean, I joked about it last week, putting Orton and Dolph Ziggler together, but maybe that could be something, at least as a pairing, as a nasty, vindictive, vicious pairing who are so bitter that they've been overlooked, you know, and cast aside. Perhaps that would work, maybe, because right now I'm struggling to think of anything else for either of them, and that's kind of a common thing, you know, the way some people are booked and look to perceive on the show. It's that throwaway of, you know, we won't bother with the character, and all of a sudden, look, we want you to care about them, but a month later, yeah, you don't need to care about them anymore. It's such a shame. I mean, again, I was going to say, you know, Rusev is another one of those guys that came up to went from NXT really hot, done something. They did do something well with him, but then gone. You know, and
remember his debut when he came in the Royal Rumble. There was so much intrigue.
Exactly,
about him.
Exactly. Yeah, another guy who came in the Royal Rumble, Ty Dillinger.
Mm.
You know, hot as hell. And suddenly he's off TV for ages, and then he's thrown into matches here and there. This is this thing. The people come up from NXT and they don't seem to really know what to do with them, you know, but beyond maybe one or potentially two storylines. And I don't know. It's a worrying trend for me. It's a really worrying trend because NXT is a really hot product, and people come up, they build them up. They come up to the main roster. People are really excited to see them. They either do nothing straight away, or they have something really good for a period, and then they disappear and they cool off. And there's something not quite right here. I mean, on that triple threat match for the US title, as it turned out to be, obviously we weren't really hotly anticipating Baron Corbin with AJ Styles. Throwing Ty Dillinger into the mix did help the flow of the match. It was certainly a better match than it would have been if it was just Baron Corbin involved.
Yeah. To be fair, they had a good match on SmackDown.
Yeah. But Ty Dillinger, do you feel like he's just a throwaway in this, and Baron Corbin as a champion? Do you think there's much beyond him other than his work on the microphone as a heel?
I've said it before, I'm not really that big a fan of Corbin, but these have probably been his two best matches on the main card. I think he had a decent triple threat with Cena and AJ before. But these two I know he's working with AJ Styles, so he should really have a good match with anyone. But yeah, Corbin, this will be a really, really important title run for him, because I mean, AJ Styles didn't do a lot for the US title, so if Corbin can do something, that'll show he can carry a title. It seems like he won't be working with AJ, if obviously he lost the rematch, so I think AJ might be going on to bigger and better things, hopefully. But
we hope so.
Yeah, so I think the first thing you say is that the triple threat match was actually really good. I wasn't expecting anything from it, but it was probably third best match of the night. Which says a lot when two of the two Hell in a Cell matches were absolutely excellent for many a reason. But this really did capture the eye. I mean, Ty Dillinger and Baron Corbin really benefited from it. I know Ty Dillinger was basically put in to take the pinfall. But Ty Dillinger's proved he can perform at that level. And Baron Corbin I don't like him talking about internet trolls and stuff like that as a gimmick, but let's see what he can do, because I didn't like him with the Money in the Bank briefcase. So I think
neither did people behind the scenes.
Yeah, clearly. So I think this is a as long as they can put that out in the back of people's memories, this could work, because he never proved it at NXT that he could get over that well. So let's see what he can do with a mid-card title and probably feud him with Ty Dillinger, or if not, I don't know. I don't know what else is there.
I think the best thing he's done was at the end of SmackDown saying, you know, I'll ride a boat in your rivers of tears. Yeah. So it was, yeah, and that was it, you know, it reveling in the fans disliking him. Mm. Not just disliking the character, but generally just disliking him. So I think as a heel character, I think he knows his character. He has a character there. It's quite well established, and he does that quite well.
He's naturally a bit of a prick, isn't he?
Well, yeah. But that's the thing. He's playing that character. He plays it really well. Yeah, that bit of it's fine. His mic work is improving. His in-ring work, I thought, used to be rather poor. Then it took a bit of an upturn, and then it kind of stalled for a bit. And yes, these have been decent matches. Pretty good match, the triple threat one anyway. You know, so it's improved slightly, but I think there's still a long way to go. But I think what you said was right. It will be interesting to see whether or not he can carry this title, and it could be the making or breaking of it, of his future, actually, how he carries this title and how people perceive him with it.
Yeah, exactly. I think the most interesting point from the Hell in a Cell match was they let him direct the match for a good portion of it, like probably the first, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, probably not that long, but Corbin was the one setting the pace with all the spots and stuff like that, rather than having AJ be the ring general. They were having Corbin direct this is going to be cliche-filled crap, but they were having Corbin be centre stage of the match, and I thought that was quite interesting. Obviously, he got the heelish victory, but maybe they just see what Corbin can do. But yeah, I think this title will be this title one will be the defining factor of his career, and let's see what he can do without AJ Styles.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well, is hopefully it's time for AJ to move back into that main title picture, and however that looks, or get in there somewhere. Yeah, I mean we will get to that bit shortly, but that is, make no mistake, you know, make no bones about it. That's where we want to see AJ Styles, at the top of the card, not with a mid card title trying to uplift it. So hopefully the future is bright. On to another title, the Women's Championship. I didn't really hold up too much hope for this one. I mean, my prediction that we would see Charlotte win and then Carmella cash in didn't come to fruition, but I do think that is what we will see eventually. It didn't happen at Hell in a Cell, but I think we're going to see that at some point soon, because this match was a bit of a nothing affair, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we keep going on to the bigger picture rather than the matches, but these last few matches, there's not really anything there other than a comment on the bigger picture. And again, the women's division on SmackDown is just not really that interesting.
No. This was more like a TV match.
Yeah.
You know, as though we're building towards a pay-per-view match, this actually felt... Because a lot of the pay-per-views now, a good portion of the pay-per-views kind of feel like you're just watching a TV show, except that you've had, you know, two or three killer matches thrown in there.
Yeah, exactly. And this one was just so... When they do the injury angle in a match, especially to the more talented one, who should be the character... I know Natalya's a bit of a... Well, veteran probably translates to old, but Natalya's capable in the ring. But why would you have Charlotte be the injured party in this one? I know it's the face versus heel thing, but Charlotte's the one who, she had the moonsault at the end, but that just led to a really crap ending.
I think this is all part of telling the story to Carmella coming and cashing in. This is a part of a bigger storyline. But the thing, like I say, the thing is that kind of a finish is normally the kind of thing you see on
exactly,
a TV
that's
match.
What I was thinking. Yeah,
building towards a big, you know, pay-per-view championship match. But it's almost of that style that what we're seeing now is we're going to work up towards probably Ric Flair being there in attendance. And somehow, you know, her knee's all banged up, but somehow she manages to somehow win the title, but she's injured. She's so banged up that Carmella comes in and is able to take it from her right in the face of Ric Flair. You know, and that's obviously it's that image that WWE are building towards. That, in my view, anyway.
They just need to get it done, really, because who have they got outside of Charlotte, Becky Lynch, who are over, really? I mean, Naomi, I think she's talented in the ring, but she didn't really connect.
It'll be Carmella. Yeah. It'll be Carmella, won't it, positioned it, as the big heel.
Yeah, they need the heel. There's nothing to bounce back off since Bliss left. It's a bit disappointing. Natalia's capable, but, I mean, her character's about cats and stuff.
Yeah, she's a solid worker, but a prime, she's not in a prime now in terms of how quick she was and how good she was in the ring. But, I mean, you mentioned disappointing, and I'm going to use that as a segue to a title that was, I'll say once was the most prestigious in the business and still should be.
Now is the bottom.
And right now is held by a jobber. And I'm sorry, but it is a jobber. And for the life of me, that this, I can't get my head around this. A guy who's come up, Shinsuke Nakamura, who's hot as hell. You've put him into a nothing 50-50 feud with Dolph Ziggler, cooled all the excitement about him coming up. And then you bang him into this program and you're having him lose to a guy who everybody else was beating quite comfortably up until about 3 months ago when you suddenly decided you need to make your product in India big. I think Jinder's definitely benefited from this run. And he's improved with his character. He's improved his mic skills. His in-ring work is still very, very limited. Yeah, but I think you could put the US title on him now, and it would have the same effect. You know, he doesn't need to have that title on him because the sad fact is he can't carry that championship.
More importantly, the show can't carry him having the championship.
This is true.
I mean, they've pulled out Shane McMahon trying to kill himself again to try and cover over the fact we don't have a proper WWE championship. And
could you imagine if that ended the show? If the title match ended the show, how people would have reacted to that pay-per-view? The
thing is, he beat him clean. Pretty clean.
Yes.
I mean, they protected Randy Orton, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. Yet they've got Shinsuke Nakamura, who, as you said, came up from NXT. Crap feud with Ziggler. Lost heelishly to Jinder the first time. He beat Cena and Randy Orton clean before this feud. What the... That just doesn't make sense. At all. And for Jinder to beat him clean, it's put a halt on Nakamura's career till the more global crowd comes in at WrestleMania season, because they'll obviously cheer for him because they know who he is. And the only way Nakamura's going to get back in the main event picture is if it's against AJ Styles in front of a smart crowd, because he's dead now. He's absolutely dead. And they had him in a bloody tag team match. I mean, Jinder can't even do a crappy tag team match on SmackDown. That's how protected he is, because they don't want to show how bad he is on TV. That's why he's having these crap weird matches where the Singh brothers are getting involved and he does two moves and wins.
Yeah, we're seeing the same match over and over again.
Yeah, they're using Aiden English over the WWE champion in a match. And Aiden English is a better worker. If Aiden English was Indian, I wouldn't be that arsed. At least he can work.
Well, it's...
I like Aiden English.
Yeah, it's... It is mad. It really is. It's disappointing, and it's, like you say, it's really hurting Nakamura. What they've done, it has hurt Nakamura. It's hurting the championship. It's hurting the product. And like you say, you can't bring him out and you can't use him in this match because for what? You know, he's got nothing. He's got nothing, and
There's only one way to fix it, and that's have AJ Styles win it. Never mind waiting for the next pay-per-view. I don't even know what it is for SmackDown. It's probably Survivor Series. So I know it's coming up, but I don't know when. But they need AJ Styles to win it on SmackDown.
So, do we see Nakamura Styles with Jinder as a triple threat, as a way to actually involve Jinder Mahal in a hot match that will, you'd expect, be very good?
God, could you imagine if he beat both of them at the same time?
Don't put a dampener on it.
No, but imagine that's the biggest boner Vince would ever have, if he could beat two of the biggest indie darlings at the same time with a marketing
ploy. He's had more than he ever really deserved to have in terms of, you know, a title run. That experiment it's failed, really, because it's done nothing. And yeah, okay, they can go to India. At this point, he doesn't actually need the belt. He'll be well known enough. They've established that the show, that belt, the SmackDown show, and the title belt, they need to be positioned better. They need to be it needs to be represented much better than it is right now. Than a guy who, for years, has been a glorified jobber. And well, he's just been a jobber. No two ways about it. He was a jobber.
In three-man band being carried by Heath Slater.
Limited worker at the bottom of the card to suddenly get thrust to the top and put the title belt on. It just doesn't work. The crowds don't go with it. You know, it's simple as that. They will not go with that.
Have him win it in India. Have a big moment at least.
Yeah.
Just waste 4 months.
Yeah, but if you wanted to put him in that position, then fine, fair enough. Build him up. You know, build him up over time, not just suddenly throw him in there. So the whole thing has been a failure, and maybe if we get Nakamura back in there with AJ Styles in a triple threat, maybe that way we get a transition and the title can move on to bigger and better things.
The thing is about the India tour is if WWE go over to India and they have Jinder Mahal versus, I don't know, Nakamura, and they have the same quality match as they've had, well, every match Jinder Mahal's been in has been pretty crap. If they have the same level quality of match again, there's going to be no repeat business. They want to put on a show. You want them to be entertained in the wrestling, not just one character. Because you're not going to have, well, I won't put it past them, but you're not going to want to have Jinder Mahal as your champion every time a tour to India rolls about.
No, they can always do a tag match. They can hide him in a tag match, I suppose. But anyway, let's move things on. Bobby Roode, Dolph Ziggler. I mean, we've mentioned Ziggler. Ziggler, the effect that he had on Nakamura coming into SmackDown, you can say exactly the same thing for Bobby Roode. Again, really hot character at NXT, was NXT champion, came in. I thought, in a way, was kind of being smart, letting him come in as initially as a babyface because they knew he would get that kind of reaction. I thought they might even transition him back to being a heel pretty quickly, you know, with it, with his goods. Microphone work and the established heel character that he has. I thought it'd be a nice, easy transition, go back, you know, and we'll get something really good from him. But no, they've tried to really work him as a babyface. He's not a natural babyface, and this is not good. And yeah, it's the Dolph Ziggler effect 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, you get cocky heel turns into cringy face pretty quickly, doesn't it? And it doesn't always, it doesn't work the better. And having him against Ziggler as a heel, who's nobody cares about. I mean, Ziggler's talented, but they've done too much damage to him. Stop giving fresh, no, it's not fresh, because obviously Bobby Roode's been around years, just in TNA. But stop giving debutants on the main roster crappy feuds that people don't care about. You've got people like Randy Orton's being wasted. Let someone make a statement on a legend. Not Ziggler, who's unfortunately been ruined, but I mean
that's a good one actually. You mentioned that. You know what? Thinking of that, Randy Orton, if he was gonna stay as a babyface, imagine that Bobby Roode comes in, gets that cheer that first week, then gives his heel promo the next week, you know. Hey, you know, look, I don't care about whether you cheer me, boo me, whatever. I'm not here for that. And, you know, I'm going to change the show around. You're all going to, you know, he's the character that he's got, the arrogant heel. And then he has a feud with Randy Orton, and he beats Randy Orton. And you, like you said there, make a statement. That's a statement. You know, someone just coming in and beating a 13-time champion, that is a statement then. That's how you get something from Randy Orton. You know what I mean? Then Randy Orton means something. And they've solicited something from Randy Orton. And it's that would have been so much better than what we've had for Randy Orton, Rusev, and for Roode and Ziggler. Definitely.
Then that opens so many doors for Bobby Roode afterwards if he wins that. Well, he should win that feud in our heads, but if he won, say if he did have a feud with Randy Orton and he won it, that would open so many doors. If AJ Styles was still US champion, there's a door. Even if Ty Dillinger became US champion, I think they feuded on NXT for a bit. There's a natural progression route. I mean, even hopefully Jinder's title reign's end is in sight, but that means he'd be ready for any part of the card, and we know Bobby Roode's reliable in any part of the card. He can gauge a reaction, and even if it is just through his entrance as a face. Like, I still like him, but there's just nothing, no chemistry between him and Ziggler. So he could do being a face in this character probably very well.
But that vanilla reaction, I think, was actually mirrored by the match that they had.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was a non-entity of a match. And this is, between two talented workers. I mean, Bobby Roode is an absolutely solid worker.
Mm.
And Dolph Ziggler, yeah, he is talented. But like you said, the way he's been handled over the past few years, nobody cares. And as a result, nobody cares about this match. So all of a sudden, the guy that's coming on the back of excitement, it doesn't mean anything now. And it's such a shame. It's such a waste, isn't it?
Thing is, this is probably Ziggler's best match since the Miz feud, and nobody give one singulatory fuck. Nobody cared. It was actually, the ending was a bit weird, but the match was actually alright, and there was not one bit of reaction to it. And then they're obviously going to have a rematch next week on SmackDown. Nobody cares.
It doesn't do anything for anyone. No, and that's it. It's another one of those. It does nothing for either guy.
Ziggler and Bray Wyatt need to make a tag team. The Buried.
The Buried. Well, that's where we'll leave that one. We'll bury that one. Because all it leaves us on this show is the final Hell in a Cell match. Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. Now, I'm not the biggest fan of Shane McMahon because he is, I think, you know, the term glorified stuntman is quite accurate, really. I mean, it's incredible what he's prepared to do, but I was cringing watching at times. over what they potentially might do to each other. I was just waiting for him to jump off the top of that cell and thinking, oh my God, you know, I don't need to see guys putting their livelihoods at risk anymore. I don't know why. I might have enjoyed watching that 20 years ago, but right now it kind of makes me cringe a bit.
Nothing tops Mick Foley, does it?
It's exactly nothing quite. But I've got to say, this was a good story that they told, and I thought Kevin Owens really led this beautifully, and it went a long time. I mean, the whole pay-per-view went 3.5 hours, but this match went a long time, but it was good, and I didn't feel bored, and that's a good thing for such a long match, especially with Shane McMahon involved.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best. It was very good. I mean, it started very quick. Obviously, they had the scrap outside the cell. But it was perfection in storytelling, and this will do wonders for Kevin Owens as a heel. He's now one of the best heels in the company, other than Roman Reigns.
has been since day one.
Yeah, and now he's on the platform that he deserves, rather than being in weird. Well, his run as the Universal Champ was good for me. I mean, they're protecting him a little bit too much, but the Festival of Friendship and now this, it shows that Kevin Owens is just so good. If they use Kevin Owens properly, he's my favourite guy in the company.
Yeah,
he's fantastic, and to have it to me, it felt like 40-minute plus match. I don't know what it actually was.
Yeah, it was around 40 minutes. I think 39 minutes, but. I've got to say as well, probably one of the best things about this match and of this pay-per-view as a whole, and I alluded to before we got started, was that WWE very rarely do this nowadays, but NXT have started doing it fairly regularly, and that is ending these special events with a reason for you to tune in to the TV show. And it's leaving, not, you know, it's bringing an end to something, but also starting something new. And the involvement of Sami Zayn was absolute perfection. You know, it was an understated use, and that was perfect. It was just absolute perfection, because it left you at the end thinking, right, what happens next? I need to see what happens next. How does he explain what he's done? Where are they going to take this? I want to see the next part. And for me, to get to the end of a pay-per-view and want to see more and want to see what comes next, that's what you should be aiming for.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I imagine viewership figures of both Raw and SmackDown aren't exactly hitting the height, but if SmackDown didn't have a spike, I don't know what else they can do, because that was fantastic. Nearly killing Shane, one. Two, having Sami Zayn brought in. I think some people would have called it, but I imagine more people were expecting Triple H, some other McMahon interference, just Kevin Owens winning clean. Sami Zayn, it does so much. It brings a new dynamic to SmackDown now that you've got two huge heels. You've got Sami Zayn, who is now relevant and is instantly in a main event picture, because he's with Kevin Owens. Them two have the world at their feet, and Sami Zayn's not had a proper run as anything for ages. Probably since he last fought Kevin Owens.
And that's part that is part of why it works so well. And hence his promo on SmackDown after it was great as well.
Did you think he had that in him? I didn't know he was that good on the mic.
I don't know. I think there's been little indications, little moments where he's got quite passionate, that he shows he has got a bit more to him. I just thought that promo was perfect.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't over the top. Yeah, it wasn't over the top. It didn't go. They didn't push it too far beyond, you know, the boundaries where suddenly you start screaming at people and things like that. It was, when you think about it, the one of the best promos that heels can give is that it has a justification to what they're saying. They have to be justified in what they're saying, except that, you know, their take on it is slightly different to what everyone else is seeing. But if there's a justification, then it makes sense. And that's the best way you get something from a heel. And there was justification to what he was saying. And it's like, from what he was saying, yeah, that's true. Yeah, okay. And it's that, you know, that heel is the twisting it in their mind. But everything he said made sense. It was logical. And it was just, so it made it absolutely, it made the whole turn plausible. You know, for a guy that's been beaten by his...
It made horrendous booking seem like good booking.
Yes, well, exactly. And the guy that's beaten him up for the last 2-3 years, it made it plausible that he could actually get back together as a friend with him. You know, and he's saying, you know what, I just kind of realised, you were right. And it's, there you go, as simple as that. And it's like a moment of genius. And you were right there as well. You know, it does so much. It adds a new dynamic. It adds a new dynamic to Kevin Owens. It's something fresh and exciting with Sami Zayn. It's another reason to tune in to SmackDown.
Mm. And if this doesn't lead to them two feuding, I don't know when, I don't know how, but if this doesn't lead to these two feuding over a WWE title, I'm going to be gutted.
Yeah, and if they're smart, they'll hold it off. Let these stay together for a year. Let these have a good year together.
If that was the main event of next year's SummerSlam, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it could be.
It's not going to be because it's WWE, but that'd be amazing.
it's more plausible than them doing it at WrestleMania, but I'd like to think that they could give them a long time together.
Mm.
You think how long they kept Owens and Jericho?
I hope they don't go into the tag team division, but I hope there is something. This leads to something big.
Mm.
If both of them, if Sami has a mid-card title and Owens the WWE title, I don't know, eventually off AJ, it could really work.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, yeah. Somewhere down the line, we mentioned the potential triple threat there, Nakamura, Styles with Jinder. So, and Jinder gets put out the picture, and then suddenly you've got Nakamura, Styles versus Owens and Sami Zayn. And then between them, you know, you get one versus the other and the other one versus the other. There's
money there. That's absolute printing money.
Yes. Not only that, it's matches you've not seen on the main roster before. And it's putting them in different places. And it's Sami Zayn. It's exciting because it's Sami Zayn, the worker that you know is really good.
Imagine if they can recreate Sami Zayn versus Nakamura from NXT.
Well,
imagine if they can recreate that somehow.
Well, there's potential.
That's how you fix Nakamura.
Well, this is it. All of a sudden, you get you move the title into things, and you do have the potential. You know, for getting the very best out of four characters, you would imagine. I mean, obviously, we've already had AJ Styles and Kevin Owens, so you don't necessarily put them two together. But in terms of a tag team or ways of switching it around, so you've got Nakamura against Owens, because they've fought before and you know that they can work together. Yeah, and Styles and Sami Zayn. There is a lot of potential there.
That's what I want to see. Yeah, I want to see them too. That's new.
It gets people excited, so it's. I enjoyed the match, but I love the fact that what they offered up at the end of it was me wanting to come back for more. So on the whole, though, as a pay per view, I mean, how did you feel about it? Good, bad, different.
I think it helps that they ended in such a strong way, but I'd say a big thumbs up. I think the good matches. And the great matches and the good matches, better way to word it, really carried the crap matches because although some of them were bad and some of them were really forgettable, you still come away thinking there was three good matches there.
Yeah, and two of them were certainly memorable, weren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'd agree on the whole. Yeah, I'd say it was good. Well, I didn't think it was great or a classic or anything like that, no. but But I thought it was good, and
for a gimmick pay-per-view, it did all it could.
Yeah, yeah, and considering the build-up to it was not all that good, it was again, I think WWE, you could say, have over-delivered where they've under-delivered on the build.
Mm. Absolutely.
So that's it. That's Hell in the Cell out the way, and like I said,
it's flown by.
Yeah, and then next week we have to talk about another pay-per-view. DLC coming up.
At least we can talk about Asuka. That's one thing.
I will look forward to that one. Anyway, yes, that wraps up this edition of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. Don't forget, as always, you can keep in touch with us on Twitter at PW_index is our account name on there. We're trying to be a little bit more active. You know, we've been on there this week. Keeping in touch with people, getting back in touch with you, give us your thoughts. We ran a couple of polls as well. So, drop us a line, see what you think. Let us know.
If it's bitching after 3 o'clock in the morning, it's normally me.
Yeah, but if you want to get in contact with us here at the show, anything that you want to say, if you want to ask any questions, anything like that, that is the place to do it. Like we said, next week we'll be back to a preview of the TLC Tables, Ladders and Chairs pay-per-view, another gimmicky one. Until then, I want to give my thanks to Guy Drinkle for joining me. And we want to thank all of you lovely listeners for tuning in and hitting that download button. But until next week, from me, Andy Wales, it is bye-bye now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.